Well, I'll go off piece straight away then, shall I? At Breakfast Church, it was a really good time because there were so many stories about Mike Boddington. And I told a story, and all I said to start this story was, I was having a chat with Mike, and he asked me, do I like ice cream? And suddenly everybody said, oh, we know about all that. I thought, why? What is this thing? So I said, yes, obviously. And he said, well, that's good, because I've bought you a present, Phil. And he handed me a ice cream maker. And apparently, at Breakfast Church, he's handed out quite a few ice cream makers over the years, and including lots of other gifts. And people told so many stories about how Mike had helped them in just everyday life and their walk with God. And they were really pleased. So, in fact, even though it's very sad that Mike is no longer with us, people in this congregation have been so helped practically and amazingly by the legend that is Mike. Splashes of Scripture. Today I'm looking at Proverbs 16, which is about plans, power, and pride. Denise posted on Facebook, what is the best advice you can give an 18-year-old? Well, there were hundreds of replies, but what was strange is that everybody replied basically with a proverb. Things like, tough times never last, but tough people do. Count your rainbows, not your thunderstorms. Or, to succeed in life, you need three things: a wishbone, a backbone, and a funny bone. And I'm sure you use them occasionally. You know, there's lots of old chestnuts like no pain, no gain. If a sibling has lost a job to a friend of the boss, you say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Or when a child loses a football match, if we're allowed to mention football, you know, you can't win them all, and all kinds of things like that. Have I got some of my favourites? Oh, yes. Here's some of my favourites. Tomorrow is always the busiest day of the week. Experience is what you get when you didn't get what you wanted. How about with this one? If you want something you've never had, then you'll have to do something you've never done. There's an old African proverb that goes, a snake that you can see does not bite. I like this one as well. A society grows great when old people plant trees whose shade they'll never sit under. And then there's other ones like no pain, no gain, and two wrongs don't make a right. I don't know whether you've got a favourite proverb. I think mine is, don't assume malice for what stupidity can explain. Or probably what I actually go for is, the sooner you fall behind, the more time you'll have to catch up. Proverbs are quite powerful because they can say in one or two sentences what a whole sermon series takes forever to explain. There's some more here. I think we did these at Breakfast Church. Just indulge me. You know, look before you leap. There's plenty more fish in the sea. Somebody's favourite. Housework won't kill you, but why take the chance? Better the devil you know, and when the going gets tough, the tough get going. King Solomon was king of Israel between 970 and 931 BC. He's best known for building the first temple in Jerusalem, but he's also known for his poetic skills. He wrote 1,005 songs. I don't know why 1,005. You thought once he got to 1,000 he would stop, but obviously he had five more. And he wrote 3,000 proverbs. Unfortunately, not many of his proverbs survive. But however, there are some that do, and somebody had the foresight to have a collection of proverbs from Solomon and other people and put them in a book called, unsurprisingly, Proverbs. And it's in the Old Testament in our Bible. And this morning, we're going to look at some of those proverbs. They're by King Solomon, and it comes under the title Plans, Power, and Pride from Proverbs 16. So we're going to start with plans, which is in the first three verses of Proverbs. And this is what it says. To humans belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. So the opening of Proverbs 16 reminds us who really is in control. We may make plans, but we really don't know whether they're going to come to fruition. Although we make our plans, it is ultimately God who determines the course of our lives. And we must acknowledge that God is in control. It's not random chance, but rather a carefully orchestrated system by our loving God. Therefore, we ought to humbly surrender our plans before God. Now, it's not that plans are not important. If you're interested, in Habakkuk, it mentions about the importance of making plans. But it's ultimately saying who is really in control. I don't even remember, a few weeks ago it was, we had somebody standing here called Jack, and he was talking about his plans to go to South Korea and the amount of planning involved, fundraising and going to this, you know, once-in-a-lifetime event, the Scouts Jamboree. Unfortunately, when they arrived in South Korea, along with loads of people from around the world, there was a heat wave, a looming typhoon, a COVID outbreak, and the UK contingent was removed straight away, along with other countries' contingent, to a safe place amid safety fears. All that planning, years of planning and fundraising, suddenly were thrown into chaos. I wonder what your plans are. Do you commit them to the Lord? But the proverb continues in chapter 16, and it goes on to say about power. Probably a famous proverb, it's actually by Lord Acton, but we'll call it a proverb. Power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is what it says in Proverbs 16. God cares about honesty. Your business is his business. If you have power, detest all kinds of wrongdoing. Power is established by having a moral foundation. Cultivate honest speech. Value those who tell the truth. But uncontrolled power wreaks havoc in lives. It's the messenger of death. The wise will stand well clear. But power under control invigorates lives. It's like spring rain and warm sunshine. There are various versions of this Bible passage. Some use the word kings. Some use the word leaders. But really, it's about people with power. And of course, it's not just kings or leaders, but everybody has power at some point. Parents exercise power over their children, and it's not long before children realize how to exercise power over their parents. I was in a park eating some sandwiches, and there was four people in this park, two parents and two children, and there was a little girl on the swing waiting for her parents to push her so she could swing. Unfortunately, the parents were busy looking after this tiny boy who was screaming, shouting, wanting ice cream, and he went on and on and on. And so the parents were totally trying to get control, but realized that I think their little boy had the most control of all. But I wonder, actually, did the little girl have the most power in the end? Because she would realize after watching this that if she wants attention, all she needs to do is to scream and shout, and her parents would come running. But if she wants a quiet life, she just sits quietly and nobody will bother her. Our workplace and families are often where the real struggles of power lie day to day. It's easy to look at politicians, CEOs of large companies, and how they abuse power. It's easy to look at everyone else and see what they're doing wrong, but it's not so easy to look at ourselves. So how do you actually control power? Well, here's a few ideas. Firstly, make the tough calls. When you have a position of power, you have to make tough choices. Whether it's in business or in the home, it's often difficult to make the right decision. It's far easier, especially as parents, to go down the popular route. It's difficult because the people you love, the people you have sometimes the most power over you, your children, your parents, your pets, and so on, you want to do what's right, but you also want to love them. But sometimes you have to make the tough call. Secondly, you need to steer clear of the power trip. Having power can have an exhilarating feeling. For some, it goes to their heads and they just want more power. You have to realize that power can disappear far easier than it was actually gained. Putting others first, freely giving credit to others, and owning up to mistakes keeps things into perspective. And also we have to remember that with power comes responsibility. If you have a position of power as a parent, a leader of a group at church, a supervisor or a manager at work, or a grandparent or whatever it is, with this power comes responsibility. And we need to take that responsibility seriously. And finally, willingly share power. Power sharing is mentioned in verse 13, specifically wanting to hear from others honest truth. It's so easy to go it alone and think you have all the answers. So don't be a lone parent, get help. Don't be a lone manager, seek assistance. If necessary, build a team. The most influential leaders are the ones who inspire people to follow them. They use their power to empower others. And the worst, they are the ones who walk alone. Do you want to do the next slide for me? Thanks. Pride is the final one. Proverbs 16, verse 18, probably the most famous Proverbs in the book. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. So what is the difference between feeling proud and being proud? Well, I've described it like this. Feeling proud is good. I'm really proud that I've passed my exams. And often you get a sense of pride when you've done something good. And you're often very proud of your children or grandchildren or whoever it is. But being proud is different. It takes that one step further. It says, I'm really proud I've passed my exams, and therefore I'm better than you. C.S. Lewis described it as this. Humility is the opposite of pride. True humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. The problem is, it's so easy to spot pride in other people. It's not quite so easy to spot it in ourselves. Jonathan Edwards describes it as this, and he goes to town on this because both him and C.S. Lewis believe that pride is one of the worst sins you can have. And this is what he says. Remember that pride is the worst viper that is in the heart, the greatest disturber of the soul's peace and our union with Jesus Christ. It's the first sin that ever was laid lowest in the foundation of Satan's whole building and the most difficult to get rooted out. You can get the idea that he wasn't very keen on pride. But then he came up with some ideas because, as he says, it's difficult to spot pride in yourself. So how do you spot pride? So these are some of his ideas. Firstly, fault finding. If you find fault with others and not yourself, it's a sure sign of being proud. Now, I did this something a little while ago. Ruth, who's our children's worker, ordered a little ball of string. But that is not what arrived. What actually arrived was this. Oh, gosh, I can hardly lift it. She goes, I'm sure on the internet it didn't look that big. Anyway, so we've got plenty of string in the church for, well, probably the rest of this millennia. Anyway, there was another box that she's buying lots of things for craft. And so I put this little box on her desk, probably full of pom-poms or anything. It was very light. And then I suddenly realized, of course, it wasn't. I was expecting a huge box to arrive and some pretty hefty piece of kit. But actually, it's this. So suddenly I realized, my fault finding with Ruth, I've just done exactly the same thing. Something I thought was huge turned out to be really small. So it's very easy to find fault with others and then suddenly realize you're doing the same thing yourself. Secondly, a harsh spirit. Those with pride often speak of other people's sins with contempt, irritation, frustration, and judgment. Again, this is a quote from Jonathan Edwards. Nice little quote, this. Christians are but fellow worms, and we ought to treat others with as much humility and gentleness that Jesus treats us. Also, superficiality. When we're proud, we're very much concerned of how we look. It's hard to believe this, but I did spend quite a little bit of time this morning making sure that I looked smart, had the right shoes, trousers, and shirt. I wonder how much attention I paid to my heart before I arrived here, as much as I did before my dress sense. Arrogance before God is another one. Do we approach God with boldness? I mean, that's good in one way, because we know that Jesus dealt with our sins. However, it's so easy to approach God with boldness, forgetting that we are sinful. Desperate for attention is another one. Pride is hungry for attention and respect. You need a better home, a better phone, a better watch, better air fryer, better clothes. And it's not just that you want something better, it's the status you want, so that people can say, wow, this family, they've got everything, haven't they? It ties in with the next one, but someone said, it's amazing how the people with the most expensive watches have no time for anyone. Because the next one is neglecting others. Pride prefers some over others. It honours those who the world deems worthy of honour and gives more weight to their words, their wants, their needs. But Proverbs 16 says, better to be lowly in spirit along with the oppressed than to share plunder with the proud. So how do we stop being proud? Well, here's just a few ideas. Firstly, be self-aware. Try to be aware of your traits, behaviours and feelings. Stop to consider if something you're doing right now is too prideful. Do I always find fault with others? Am I harsh on those that fail my standards? Am I arrogant in my boldness before God? Am I attention seeker? And do I neglect the needs of others? Another one is stop comparing yourself to others. Choose not to think about who you are as a person compared to somebody else. You don't need to look down on someone else to feel good. We're reminded in the Bible that the fact that we are unique in our own way. Appreciate your uniqueness and appreciate everyone else's uniqueness. The next is follow someone's leadership. If you have pride, you tend to be the boss over everything, or that's what you want anyway. Being a follower means you have to actually respect someone else's leadership. Being directed by another person actually takes humility. And that's why when you're in that situation, you need to be respectful as you get told what to do. And that's why following Jesus is such a good thing when it comes to pride. We rid ourselves of pride and follow someone who had great power but chose to walk with great humility. Another good way to stop being proud is to let people help you. Ask someone for advice on something you're struggling with. Request a favor from someone. Go out of your way to seek help from someone. Allow yourself to be helped and thank that person for doing it. And finally, I've put these three together. As mentioned earlier, pride can lead you to spend too much time praising yourself. When you're tempted to brag about yourself, why not brag about somebody else instead? When somebody tells you something they did, compliment them for it. Avoid trying to one-up them by speaking about something you did in return. People actually appreciate it when you say nice things to them. They might even say something nice to you in return. Pride also makes you focus too much on doing things for yourself. Focus on being more selfless. And forgive people. Those with pride tend to be very unforgiving of others. They tend to hold a grudge. You can take a step towards being less prideful by forgiving those who wronged you. And choose not to let that anger towards that person eat into your peace of mind. And you could argue, and I'm going to argue this, that praise, serving, and forgiving are the central themes of being a disciple of Jesus. So I'm going to end with an illustration. You're probably wondering what those chairs are for. Well, I'm going to suggest that all this is actually on a scale. I'm hoping that not all of us are super proud. But in the middle, and this is good because you sat at the front, because you can actually read this, where people at the back won't be able to. But this is what Jesus is in the center. He seeked, from when it comes to plans, he seeked God's purposes. When it comes to power, it was meekness and majesty. And when it came to pride, he exhibited humility. So he goes in the center here. But of course, on the other side is my plans. That's what people sometimes call my way or the highway. Or power mad. Or being proud. And that's one of the extremes. So we could argue that this one is over here. So something to think about is, where are you on this scale? Are you seeking God's purposes? Do you have meekness and majesty when it comes to exhibiting power? And do you have humility? But you may be wondering what this side is for. Well, this, of course, is the complete opposite. Instead of having plans, you live in a life of chaos because nothing is planned. You abdicate your responsibility because you don't actually want power. And then you wallow in self-pity. And that is on this scale over here. And neither end are very good, are they? Because on this end, I would argue that this causes not your destruction, but the destruction of everybody around you. Whereas on this side, it causes the destruction of yourself. So have a think for a few moments. Where are you on this scale? And are you moving towards the middle? I mean, surely that is what being a disciple of Jesus is all about. Aiming for the middle, where we can be less of our plans, more of God's plans. Less of our power, more of God's power. And instead of being pride, walked in humility. I'll sum it up with these words that Ian said last week. It's not the power we wield, it's the example we set. It's not the power we wield, but the example we set.